don't know. Just for the sake of the meeting, may I know who is here? I know the person, veteran, is here. Who else is here? Come in, Sadebia. He'll speak for you. It is only defense and military veterans. Oh. Okay. No, it's fine. Okay. No, come up in that. You are a veteran, so you must sit here. National Surgery. Thank you very much. We have welcomed the department ahead of my colleagues from the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much for joining us, Rebbe Ale and the other members. I hope that other members will still be joining up. Would really appreciate that. We have three presentations this morning from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development and the Correctional Services. I wish they were all here. But it's fine. As long as Treasurer is here, it's fine. If the others are not here, we'll deal with them according to the program in front of us. And welcome Secretary of Defense. I spoke to you. I thought that you were in front, but. Understand that you are not in town. Tatara Matra, speak here in front. But you're welcome this morning. You know, the reason for inviting this meeting, I'm sure the standing committee will advise me. Whether we here this morning as standing committee on appropriations or as the portfolio committee for performance monitoring and evaluation, because both of them deal with the matters before us this morning. The reason we invited the department and maybe. With reference to what I said, to who are we exactly, whether I'm a second, whether we're a vocation, whether we're what, it's because both of them deal with this matter. The Standing Committee on Appropriation deals with matters relating to the Public Finance Management Act, and as the Portfolio Committee for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, we also do oversight over the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, which is also responsible for ensuring that the department abides by the 30-day payment regulation. So we received a report from the Department of performance monitoring department. We see in a national treasury, everyone pointing out to the departments that do not pay the suppliers within the scheduled time. According to the according to PFMA, section 38, which deals with the general responsibilities of the accounting officer. Then section 38(1)(f) says, the accounting officer for a department or a trading entity or a constitutional institution must settle all contractual obligations and pay all money owing, including the governmental claims, within the prescribed and agreed period. H says must take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against any official in the service of the department, trading entity, or constitutional institution who, one, contravenes or fails to comply with the provision of this act. Two, commits an act which undermines the financial management and internal control system of the department, trading entity, and then it goes on and on. The Federal regulations according to the Federal regulations, honorable members, 8.23. But let's start with 2.2. 2.2 says before approving expenditure or incurring a commitment to spend, the delegated or authorized official must ensure compliance with any limitations or conditions attached to the delegation or authorization. Now 8.2.3 says unless determined otherwise in a contract or other agreement, all payments due to creditors must be settled within 30 days from a receipt of an invoice, or in case of civil claims, from the date of settlement or court judgment. In other words, there is no exception. It means that if we owe it, any of the people mentioned here, your supplier, in case of a civil claim, from the date of the settlement of court judgment. Now, it means that we must pay within 30 days. And the reason for inviting the department here this morning is that this is not happening. Now, the issue really, the challenge that we are facing with is that we're not only dealing with your big companies who can sustain themselves, if they are not paid for 6 months or for a year, can continue to happen. We're dealing with sometimes small contractors who really depend on this payment from the department. If they are not paid within 30 days, it means that they will struggle to survive for the following months or so. And now, others, they go under. There's no alternative because they entirely depend on this. They go under. And in many cases, which we have not received, we have received the detail of exactly, I'm sure the report has that detail of who exactly is being owed, how much. You know, others We know other departments too. The department, they take sometimes the supplier to court. And what the suppliers have done in return, they have written to us to say, please, just tell the, just ask the department to pay us. We want to settle out of court because we don't have the capacity to go to court and stand toe-to-toe in court to the department instead of getting what is due to us. Now we've got to pay for lawyers and do that. We don't have that. So, in other words, this is a challenge. National cells are reported to us as well on the 10th of May, yes, about this matter. And what they said, I don't know if some of the members still have, but it's not an issue. I'll read out what National Rector had to say. Otherwise, also raising the challenges for in departments fulfilling this obligation. National Rector has to say, I quote, despite the foregoing, many departments are still not affecting payment to their suppliers within 30 days from receipt of an invoice. This undesirable practice has now reached systemic levels, and besides being in contravention of the Public Finance Management Act and federal regulation, this practice is severely affecting the cash flow position and sustainability of businesses, especially the small, medium, and micro enterprises. Many such businesses are closing down largely due to financial constraints, while others are resorting to drastic measures to keep afloat, which include retrenchment of employees. These measures are counterproductive to the government's priorities, which include the creation of decent jobs through inclusive economic growth. So, I mean, number two are as well. They are speaking here from experience. Now, the challenge, the other challenge that all our members and the colleagues people could also assist with from a chair, the challenge with this is that the, especially the SMEs, they are afraid to go to the department or if they come to you, they say, please, don't tell them that I said this. You know, they plead with you not to tell the department that they have come to you to appeal to the, to members of parliament for assistance because they want to get business tomorrow. And they say, if we report, we'll not get business tomorrow with the department because we will have reported this matter and therefore always there will be, it's not a penalty, but some kind of victimization, that is the word. So rather, the person would rather suffer than report, so that they can continue, the vendor could continue with service, at least to continue with the service, despite being unpaid or what. Now, Secretary, now the issue is, why are we throttling our people? Whether it's a national growth plan, whether it's any policy of government is saying the small jobs, I mean the small, the SMEs are the ones that create jobs. But if we don't pay them, it means we destroy them. Well, with those few opening remarks, honored members, maybe I should invite the department to address us. Secretary of the Defense, you will introduce your team. Can I just ask the staff just to prioritize the members?
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Kulune.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. My name is Sam Kulune. I'm the Secretary of Defense. I have here the delegation from the Department of Defense that is invited to come and present on this major problem that we are facing. I will ask the members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Pius Sakela, the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Defense.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Seth Makani. I'm the Chief Director of Funding in the Department of Defense.
We will understand
that anyone... Switch on the mic and stick to the mic so that we can hear who is here.
My apologies, Chair. I pressed the wrong button. My name is Seth Makani, I'm the Chief Director of Accounting in Defense. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Thobekile Kamere. I'm Chief Defense Policy Strategy and Planning in the DOD.
Good morning, Chair, members. My name is Irshan Dango. I'm responsible for the accounts payable in the Department of Defense. Accounts payable. Payment of accounts.
Morning, sir. I'm Brigadier General Edward Munafi. I'm a Director of Procurement Management in the DOD.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. My name is Gloria Spellman. I'm the Head of Internal Audit in the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Kopano Lidelo. I'm Chief Director of Material Governance in the Department of Defense within the supply chain integration. Material governance, we do policy for supply chain while procurement does execution of that policy. So it's a high level. Yeah, you can print them and then we convert them into what the department should comply with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mutumi, Ebe Mutumi, Director General of the Election. And I have colleagues who will introduce themselves.
Morning. My name is Leseni Mate. I'm Head of Corporate Services in the Department of Military Veterans. Corporate Services.
Morning. Morning, Chairperson. Morning, everyone. My name is Lydia Miso, the Director Internal Audit, Department of Military Veterans. Thank you.
Which I will just highlight as we do the presentation.
I would like to concur with the remarks that have been made by the chairperson in the opening, that it is really a regulatory obligations for us in the Department of Defense and other departments to ensure that we do pay our suppliers in heavy days. I also like to concur that failure to do that does put a lot of strain on our industry, particularly on the small and medium enterprises who cannot afford to have large bank accounts that can carry them over 60 or 90 days that we end up finally paying. And I would also like to assure the committee that as the accounting officer for the Department of Defense, since I started, I had made this a priority within the department, that is compliance with these treasury regulations in particular and other treasury regulations. I have gone further to establish what we call the department, a suppliers payment forum that meets every month, which is composed of the Department of Finance, Department of Procurement Unit, as well as the Department of Logistics. I also agree that from time to time, people who, when they're not paid in 30 days, they hesitate to approach us directly because of the fear of victimization. And I can assure the members of the committee that in all my outreach programs, when I interact with the suppliers to the department, I give them my cell phone number, I give them my email address to say if there are any issues, actually, even around the issue of payment, they can write directly to me as an accounting officer to raise the issues around the payment, which I then refer to the relevant authorities. From time to time, you will find the fault within the Department of Defense. Others, you are going to find the fault with the supplier themselves, who might not have provided accurate information sometimes, who might actually be taking chances claiming for services that they were never delivered. But we all have to sift through this. We have then put down the presentation today to according to categories of the areas where we are facing difficulties. If you look at this chart, this is in percentages. Who are the people who are not getting paid, and what are the reasons of not getting paid within 30 days? I think this will be a slide that maybe, with your permission, Chairperson, where I'll have to spend more time. And then after that, the rest of the slides, I will just take them very, very quickly. The biggest issue are the medical payments. 30% of the bills that are not paid within 30 days are in the environment of medical payments. And then the others that come very close to that of non-payment within 30 days is because of the legacy information and communication systems. And then the other 10% will be lack of knowledge within personnel in the procurement environment. And the other 10% you can see is vacancies within the procurement centers. And then the other 10% is administrative processes that are involved. I will then try to explain each one of these above, although it's reflected on the slide, but I will just say that we are looking up there. And then when we come to the slide, I will try not to repeat, I will just be highlighting the interventions that we're setting up in place. When the members of the South African National Defense Force are referred to the healthcare providers outside the South African Military Health Services, as you know, we only have three military hospitals, that is Pretoria, Bloemfontein, and Cape Town. But if you're in Mtubatuba, you're in Northern Cape, you're in Limpopo, you're in Mpumalanga, you don't have any military hospital nearby. If you need urgent care, we have to send you to the private care providers. The problems we have with medical payments is that the doctors, most of the time it is the
service providers themselves who are non-compliant. They will refuse to give you tax clearances, certificates, as long as they don't do that. You come and get care and you must pay up front. They will be, sometimes even when people have had care given, we must have somebody within the department who will then issue what we call receipt vouchers, in other words, acknowledge that the product and services were delivered. This will not be the patient itself. You will not be saying to me that, I went there, actually, I did get an X-ray. You require another personnel, which will be the doctors within the South African Military Health Services, who will then will have to certify that, yes, the X-rays was done, laboratories were done, and this was the cost of them. So there is a lot of difficulties within that system of getting verification of the health care that have been provided on this invoice. And then the doctors go straight to our members and start releasing them for not paying the fees when we are demanding that they should comply with on the supplier side with all the information we need before they can get paid. When you look at the ICT systems, as we are going to indicate, different services have different information communication systems. The Navy, the Military Health Services, the Army, and Air Force, all of these systems are not talking to each other. And to capture the products and services received, I think most lead to a lot of delays that are found in those 20% of invoices that are not paid within 30 days. When I talk about vacancies within the procurement centers, we have two procurement centers for the whole country of footprint. That is in Victoria and in Simonstown. And these procurement centers, of course, are manned by our women and men in uniform. And as you would then know, they are all there's a high turnover. In other words, if you took me now as a captain and you put me in the procurement center, when time comes for procurement, when time comes for deployment to other operations, then there will be a number of vacancies that will be left that needs to be filled, and there is a high rate of turnover, which leads to loss of knowledge and expertise in this procurement environment. The administrative process simply refers to the issues of human error. Sometimes people, when they are on leave, their invoices will be sitting there, or when the documents have been kept out, they are lost, they don't get to the payment centers after the invoices have been received. So on the whole administrative processes, we are referring that was mostly due to the human error. The others that are running at 5%, the receipt of vouchers is that once the product and service have been received, we must have that invoices, before a certain invoice is paid, it must be accompanied by the invoice as well as the receipt vouchers. The receipt voucher simply states that an officer has actually verified and confirmed that those products and services were received. The incomplete supplier details is that with our SMMEs, as Chairperson would know, is some changes that come in from the time when the tender was awarded or the contract was signed for the supply to the point where the products are delivered and the invoice is sent. We will find that actually some of the payments we try to do to these banks, they just bounce back to us, saying that the bank account is invalid or is closed, is non-functional, maybe because we haven't paid in 30 days and the company is forced to close the bank account. But we do have the problem of not getting complete supply details, including the tax clearance. We are required to have tax clearances before we can pay the suppliers. I think that one constitutes about 5% of these invoices that are not paid. The dispute with suppliers, I think, has been highlighted from time to time, and I'm sure you'll hear from other departments, simply people saying that they're rendered services when we know very well that their services were never rendered. The availability of funds is more on our side, whereby you might have a financial authority in a certain unit where you are. You might be in Tuba Bay. You have a financial authority to up to spending that amount of money. So when you have contracted, you contracted at that value, but by the time the goods are delivered, which might be some time later, the price has gone up, and that authority that you had, whether it was a 25,000 payment, now is 30,000, so you cannot pay that 30,000. You have to escalate it upwards, and where you're escalating to, it's going to lead to some delays, especially because they're not going to take very kindly that you have contacted above the financial authority that is delegated to you. The issue of lack of knowledge of personnel, it refers to the procurement system itself. I'm sure the chairperson and honorable members will agree that this has now become a specialized field of supply chain management. I think Treasury will attest to that. And when we have a general soldier being placed in an environment of a supply chain management, which includes both logistician service, logistician expertise, as well as financial management expertise, we end up in a situation whereby we will have to do a lot of training, both on the financial and on the logistic side, so that we are able to process this supply chain management in an integrated and efficient manner. So I think, Honorable Chairperson, I can then say that if the Department of Defense is being highlighted as one of the, I don't know whether the term that we are going to use, whether we say the worst culprit or that is one of the departments that is not complying with this regulation, is because of these many challenges that we face. Just to give you an idea, we process about 23,000 invoices a month. Out of those, and these 23,000 are coming from all over the country, and they will be either processed in Simonstown or Pretoria. Whether they are from Eastern Cape, from Akado, from Northern Cape, from Tubatuba, from wherever, even along the borders themselves, they will be processed, they will be suppliers who are rendering services to our soldiers on the border lines guarding our borders. It takes a while before these invoices can get to these centers. And 23,000 of them is quite a high number. Since we have started chasing this, we are reporting to Treasury every month. We submit a report to Treasury every month, telling Treasury how many invoices were paid within 30 days. I would say maybe last month, for instance, we processed about 50 million rand worth of invoices. And then of those, I would say that, we processed about 60 million, I'm sorry. We processed about 60 million worth of invoices over that month. And then of those, 52 million of them were paid within 30 days. Only 8 million were not paid within 30 days. When you compare where we were this time last year, we were paying 70% of our invoices within 30 days, and this year now we are paying 85% within. But we are going to always be the highest, because that 15% that we are still not paying within 30 days is going to reflect as one of the highest. So then we can go through the next of the slides very quickly. What action plans are we are we putting into place? When we talk about the expertise that we need, identification of we are in the process of identifying qualified personnel. We are developing retention plans into our procurement processes, reviewing the current processes, and also we are in the process of setting up structures to have procurement recognized as a mastering, meaning that we want to have procurement in the Department of Defense recognized as a specialized field, where people, we don't just send a general soldier, a general staff member to be in the procurement. We have to have trained people, either in financial management, in logistics management, or in supply chain management, trained, and have this procurement as a specialized field, in other words, as a profession, if you want. That's what you mean by mastering and set up appropriate structure. Because right now, people who are in the procurement, who are receiving goods and processing the goods, are really not part of a set structure. A set structure within the unit, at the unit level, and even at the region or at the command level. We don't have such this putting up the procurement system and the personnel into the procurement is that right now in the Department of Defense we have a moratorium on new structures. The moratorium was brought about because we wanted to put moratorium structure until we have completed the defense review, which has taken a little bit longer than we thought they will. But also in terms of appointing people into these vacant courses, our AR budget as it is today for this financial year is 950 million short, because the Treasury has put reductions in our budget and they put ceiling on the AR budget. So as it is, as an accounting officer, I'm in a difficult situation budgeting for a shortfall of 950 million, meaning that by March I will be coming to the Portfolio Committee on Defense and say, actually, I have overspent on HR by 950 million simply because the Treasury has cut off that amount for our personnel. So I cannot set up these structures like the procurement. Right now, I will have to find where am I going to get the 950 million. Obviously, I have to cut down on the operations if I have to continue. And just for members to be aware where that's coming from. One is not here to just win a wine, of course. We have cut our cloth according to the budget available, knowing the economic strains that we have. But the defense review of 1998 foresaw our soldiers being in the military bases, being in the hospitals, being in the naval bases. We never in 1998 foresaw a situation where we will have to deploy soldiers into safeguarding the borders, because that was a function of police, sailors to fight anti-piracy in Mozambique, to fight piracy in the anti-piracy operations and along the Mozambican Channel, or peacekeeping operations as we have deployed in Sudan and in the DRC. This was not part of the 1998 defense review. 1998 defense review said cut down, reduce your soldiers from 84,000 to 74,000. And that's what we're suffering at right now. Our headcount is at about 29,000. And according to Treasury, we should be at 74,000. So that means that this challenge is going to stay with us. And I'm here in front of the committee not able to tell exactly how we're going to solve it.
In front of the committee of parliament,
not able to put down my action plan how I'm going to resolve it. When it comes to the outdated information system, as you can see, we said the Navy has what they call OSIS, the Army, companies, and the medical services AIMS, and right now, we are working very closely with the National Treasury to see that when the invoice comes in, it's registered on FMS, our financial management system. And through this financial management system, as you can see there on 2D, we have introduced a model now where we can trace that invoice on our e-procurement. And from the time it is submitted to the time when it is paid. This is a system that's being introduced in phases, and we hope our target is to ensure that there is total compliance of this electronic management of our invoices and receipt vouchers by March 2015, meaning that we would like to ensure total compliance in the Department of Defense by the end of the financial year 2013-2014. I will not spend much time on this one, as you can see like there in 3B, where we're saying that this long paper intensive process will be resolved with the introduction of this integrated procurement system as proposed by National Treasury, and we're working closely with National Treasury. Hopefully by 2015 the system should be running. We are doing the training right now throughout the country, training on the bases as well as the various logistics centers and various units, training the people to be able to capture all the invoices into the system, verify receipt of goods and services through the system, and also for them to verify that actually payment has been successfully made to the suppliers. And this will enable us to monitor and evaluate these processes. That's why we are able to test, to trace whether are we improving or not, improving. We see a slow improvement, but not as fast as we'd like to see it. We talked about suppliers required to supply the tax compliance certificates, which sometimes get delayed. Then the plan is that once supply is on the database and has been awarded a contract to supply best products and services, the system itself, our e-procurement system, must capture all the details that need to capture, the bank details, the tax clearances, and all other details that are required to ensure efficient payments. Well, I won't go into detail with the dispute of with suppliers, but all I can say is that what we want to do is that when Treasury records us as not paying within 30 days, Treasury must not include those invoices that have disputes. So it means then that we should not be telling Treasury that these are the ones that have disputes, or we should exclude, I don't know how you put it, but when we report, we should exclude those invoices where we have disputes, so that they are not counted as not being paid within 30 days. But I can assure you, I'm not going to pay them, some of them, because no products or services were ever received. On the administrative side, I think we have indicated now the various human errors that happen leading to a delay in complete certification of invoices, the lack of signatures, incomplete signatures, and that you find that the invoice that was sent to us and the received vouchers that are reflecting different amounts. So definitely that is not going to be paid. And that one might be administratively. We see the system where wrong information has been captured. Or sometimes our IT systems don't talk to each other. For instance, they can be a big issue just because of whether are you recording your bills as so many rands, comma, cents, so many cents, or you are saying full stop and so many cents. Just one system saying comma, one system using the full stop, that will throw the system completely off, and it will not be recognized depending how it was inserted. So for the confirmation and the correctness of these items and their capturing and certification and registration of these, all of this is what we involve in our training modules, so that people, they know how to capture all of this information. But also, sometimes there are just poor performance in the systems. People who just don't do, civil servants who might not be doing the work at a level where we want them to perform. And we are in the process of identifying and naming these poor non-performance in the implementation. And whenever indicated, we do institute board of inquiry or disciplinary action, especially what is related to me and to the level of the accounting office. I always insist that I want to, if the department was in the wrong paying within 30 days, I want to know what action was taken. I concur, Chairman. I concur, Chairperson. Actually, I think this is just, and also we've stipulated the presentation. All we are saying is that there are action plans that are along each and every program. But so I'll go straight to the conclusion. And in our conclusion, really, is that in all of the areas that we have identified, according to the categories, we have specific action plans that we'd like to take and we'd like to implement. I have now asked the suppliers payment forum to keep track of our performances on a quarterly basis. So we'll be able to report to various committees, including the portfolio committee on defense, on various progress we're making quarter by quarter in this issue. As I said, on the last quarter, we were paying 85% of our invoices within 30 days, and hopefully by the time this financial year end, we should be at least beginning to pay. I would be more satisfied if we're paying more than 90% of our invoices within 30 days. Thanks very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much. I'm used to calling people CG. I think that's another position of yours in another name.
Mr. Secretary. But, honorable members, is there any addition here? Fine. If the defense military veteran one unit or I think one presentation, am I right?
Person, yes, it would be because our systems, it only with effect from the 1st of April of this year that the DMV started to utilize its own separate systems. So for all intents and purposes, what the DOD has said would apply to DMV, it is until the end of this last financial year before we had our own systems, financial management systems.
Okay, but I see the technicality without talking principles. Okay. Honourable members, may I invite comments and questions? Honourable Swart. Honourable Magana. Honourable Menia. Honourable
thank you very much for the presentation. I hear all the reasons why things are not happening, and they sound very feasible, but Chair, we are in breach of PFMA, and that is we are not conforming to what is prescribed in law. So, you know, there needs to be an urgency about this. Much more than what we are seeing at the moment. I find it difficult to understand that, you know, we have to have fights with suppliers and details about suppliers, but surely when you go out on tender, before you allocate the tender, you have all the tax clearance certificates, you have the details of the supplier, you have his bank details, so, you know, I don't understand all these reasons for not paying them. But as it was quite correct, you said, Jeff, what worries me most is that we are adversely affecting SMEs. And I really would like to request the department to make sure that SMEs receive priority payments or priority treatment as far as it's concerned, because they're the people that create jobs. They're also the people that, suffer the most if they're not paid at the end of the day. So that's the one thing. And then, Chair, I would just like to say that, we hear what the percentage is, that it's paid within 30 days. I would like to see the committee calling the department back towards the end of the year and seeing how they progressed with the action plan and see how the payments have progressed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks to the presentation. Let me just ask these questions on the slide 15, where the conclusion is made. The very first sentence is a doubting first sentence. Now, it says that this can only work if, there's a big if there, if all actions are in the plan to be implemented. Now, I don't know, Chair, why is that doubt, that big doubt? I mean, it's a first sentence, first bullet. Clearly tells us that there's not going to be any full compliance. Because in the mind of the presenter already is beginning to tell us that he's doubting that actions are going to be implemented, and therefore he does not want to put anybody's head on the block for full implementation. I'm worried about that, I must say, because who's responsible to the actions and the implementation of these actions, for these actions to see the light of day? Certainly should be the management of this department. Certainly should be all those accounting officers of this department. It can't be Parliament.
I would have liked to see a more positive conclusion in the very first sentence that worries a lot out of me. So, that said, Chair, I think that what is very clear, I wanted to ask in that slide that's called the diagram, a bar chart with 30%, 20%, and 15 and 5. What, if you quantify what is not paid, inclusive of what you call dispute, is that the quantification of that, is that what is it in terms of money, the global figure, is it? Maybe if you can explain that. You did mention a figure of 8 million, you did mention other figures. I'm not sure whether that is a total sum of figure that is in. If it's 8 million that is unpaid, which is more than 30 days, it's a lot of money for business, a small business that basically have a small contract in terms of the supply. I'm worried about the statement that says some of these invoices are not going to be paid, or I'm not going to pay them, because there is no service. Now, I'm worried about that statement because I don't know what is behind the statement. Is a contract that a gentleman's contract entered into through a gentleman's agreement between parties without detailed responsibility and requirement as what each one must provide? That would necessitate such a dispute to an extent that you're not going to be paid because service is not rendered. Are there no personnel responsible for making sure that there is a compliance? What is being suggested or what is being agreed to be supplied, will it be supplied at the time that is required? Why must it be a dispute at the end of the process? Because surely there should be some kind of, even before the invoices, there should be some delivery notes. There's supposed to be a delivery notes of the supplier, things that you're going to do. Somebody in the department must be able to say, I signed because the goods have been received, or the goods has... Now, maybe the explanation of this complex situation will help me to understand that. I hear, Chair, which is another worrying factor. I hear that there is an issue about the 950 million in discussion, or that is the treasury that was cut by treasury. Now, and I hear the sentiments that suggest that unless we get this money, we are not going to be able to perform what we're supposed to perform. And I worry about that statement. Because it's a conditional statement to adhere to the law, that we can only do that if Treasury give us back, or Treasury give us back the 950 million rand. That really requires 950 million to ensure that there's a verification process of invoices and confirming of invoices of the supplied goods that have been. I don't agree with that, that actually it is. I hear that there is a different process about the process of asking for additional funding. But I think if it's going through this way of not paying suppliers as a way to get the leverage, to get more money, it will be said. And I don't know, I think if that is the case. Yeah, the wrong people are punished, have been used here as to be able to liberate the treasury to get the resource in order to do this. But I think that they will explain this. All the disputed stuff, the invoices, the where there's a dispute and there's a process, that dispute end between the two, on the two desks, or does it go to court? Does it? Do we have anything on our desk that is now pending litigation as a result of the refusal of payment? And if there is, what is the quantity of it? How do you quantify that to be? And because normally these things end up with a lot of money, at the end of the day you might have paid the settled dispute and paid the service provider that had provided service. Because if there is a weakness of personnel in-house who are not sure about what goods they receive, and at the end of the process there is a question mark about the supplier who supplied the information, that the first that is being punished is the wrong person, because the issue is internal. Now, what is the strategy around change management strategy that the department has put together? I hear the issue about turnover, people being promoted upwards, and the vacuum that it creates. Surely there should be in-house kind of change management plans. Should there be a person going up, there's people that are in the department that are able to do the work. It can't depend. Big department of this one depend on one person. If the person goes up, then the whole, everybody drops the ball. So, Chair, do you have anything called proposal call for any suppliers in the department where tenders are not called? Is there a proposal call that in terms of providing this particular service, give us a proposal, how are you going to do it? And in that way, you have lack of detail in terms of parties' commitment to certain delivery that they need to have to provide. Is there a tool, and here's the presentations, a verification tool of this that is got both in terms of electronic and human and body, warm bodies, in terms of verification process with the capacity within in-house? Because if this is going to recur, it's a recurring thing or moving target, the backlog will continue to build. Because if you have that gap, you'll continue to have more of the same problem. And tomorrow, if somebody else is promoted again, you're going to have that reversal effect of the same issue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think Honorable Matakani was quite comprehensive in all the responses. I'd like to raise very specific issues, and those are basically, what consequences did any of the officials face up to date? We hear about disciplinary action will be taken, but in terms of regulation, financial misconduct must be dealt with. And this is considered also financial misconduct if payments do not take place within the prescribed period. So I'd like to know if there's any consequences to any official that failed in the responsibilities. Secondly, the staff issue of high turnover, I think we have to ask the question and the reasons for this high turnover. If attrition, if it is, that's normal, people retiring and leaving the service, and of course if it is being promotion and us taking up posts, I've got a problem because when you have an organogram and these are funded posts, that's not vacancies, people leave a job and others need to fill the job. So it's a paid position, which means we have to recruit competent people to take the job and not promote incompetent people to run the job. That's like creating a pope or a buddy that can't even do the work. And then that, of course, implicates the whole organization. So I think it's just bad recruitment, bad screening, and not taking the necessary steps to employ the competent people to actually do the job in SCM. The other one I'd like to raise is fruitful and wasteful expenditure. Because of these late payments, how much extra interest we pay per annum or per month to suppliers for not complying with the regulation? Are there charges in that agreement when a supplier applies and it's not paid on time that there will be interest charge on the outstanding monies? Can we have an idea of that? Of course, Honorable Matakani mentioned if there was any litigation. I would also go further and ask how many companies were actually liquidated because of this department. Do we have any idea of how many companies actually closed up? Because we did not fulfill our part of the deal. The other one I'd like to know is the inadequate budget. When Treasury meet with all the accounting officers, there are a cycle in place and budget reviews, and therefore whatever happens of it, even if there are shortfalls or cuts in any budget, those things then have to be considered. And a budget is readjusted so that every single item that is considered for that financial year going ahead will be accommodated and will be paid for. So it cannot be an inadequate budget because then there is no budget planning at all. So it is contradictory to any logic that you make shortfall arrangements and you do not adjust your budget. It means that you still stick with the initial budget. So that is not even a plan. So I think from the department's side, it is totally unacceptable to speak about an inadequate budget in terms of paying credits. An inadequate budget to deal with your commitments that you want to achieve, that is to be understood in the light of a shortfall. So those are not committed items on the agenda or on the budget items. So I think that we need to clear up. The issue of exception reports, that is a bit unacceptable. If we have a 15% non-payment of debts at the end of the month, Honorable Chair, then we need an exception report to justify why those payments were not made. And there's indication here that these reports are not always complied with. So Treasury needs to be informed why the department has not acted. And if people do that report, they know what steps to take to address the issues. And that also is part of the AGS report, of the management report that comes back to the department. So we like to know on a monthly basis, of that 15% on average that has not been paid, how many measures have been put in place to deal with it immediately in the following month. As we can note from the report here, some of the staff, they are just damn lazy. That they pay only these things at the end of financial year, which is totally unacceptable. We can understand the medical environment where people have to use many private outsourced service providers and your receipts coming from all over, or vouchers or invoices from all over, and to compile that information is a bit of a nightmare. We can understand that. And that needs to be, of course, facilitated so that one can capture it properly, but it's open to abuse. Clearly, if those processes are not well managed, many invoices can slip through of services that were actually not rendered. And this point was raised by the Secretary as well, to say that the verification of certain invoices is also still under scrutiny. So the issue of abuse and corruption and other things is rife in an environment where you have chaos. Now I think I was just on the other one that Honorable McCann referred to is also the issue of, I will just add, the financial limitation, the delegations given to officials that they can sign off tenders for the department in the different. People have different delegations and different authorities to sign off, and of course we need to know the limitations for the managers, for the directors, for the director generals, right up to the top. What are those levels? And my final request is, if this can also be included, this in the QBR for the Portfolio Committee on Defence, an update on this report to be included in that report for us as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Honourable
Thank you, Chair. After all the questions were raised, nothing is left now. Look, now we also accommodate Portfolio Committee here. I only want to on page 12 and 13, I think it's important that we, first of all, I think I want to thank the department for being so frank and honest with us today. I think that is what is important for us. They are clear with us on this. But there's a lot of fallacies. We cannot run away from that. And we want strong action from the department for management. I think that is the only way how we can address this thing. On 12 and 13, I only want to ask that I think we must have certain time frames. We must, I didn't see that here in your action plan. I think we must have certain time frames. I think if you can put this with your action plans, then I think we can make progress. And in your 70% of last year, and now you say 85%, is that 70% on how many? Is that the same 1,000 invoices and now also 85,000 invoices? Or is the 85? I just want to find out, you know, 85 can be part of 900 and the 70 can be about 1,000. So I just want to find out how you come to that sense. But Chair, I think the seriousness of this thing is mentioned by all the honorable members here. And but I'm glad that action plan is on the table. And now it is only implementation and stronger action from management. So that's the only comment I can make at this stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. When I was listening to explanation given by the Secretary, it was talking about that Treasury is holding on onto the, I don't know, is it a law or policy of 1998 to say they might cut off. But reality is there are a lot of things that are happening that has added on, where people go for deployment to border, they did not have the budget, they've never budgeted before. Sailors to fight the piracy, peacekeeping, that's how I understood it. It means it has added more. But I want to find from Treasure, if they are here, if they see, because I'm definitely sure the department did tell them, or they did see in the report that there is extra activities. What was their role? Did they make sure that there's policies, or they give the department itself some guidance to say, because the policy says 75, now extra things have come in, what do we do with this policy? That is one of the things that they are supposed, in terms of their technical advice, they've got most technical support. So what was their role in terms of technical support? Because those are some of the things that they need to look at as a department. In terms of people claiming for the service before, when the job is not done, it simply means the system itself is very weak. If personal insight can manipulate the system, that people can put in invoice and claim, then the system itself is weak. And the second issue that I think, I don't say it like that, that the system will be weak. It's only two places where there's payment of invoices. So there's no one on... There's no one on who can verify. If I'm staying in Northern Cape and my invoice or my to go to Simonstown or Pretoria, obviously there is going to, it's too much centralized. That's my own thinking. If they could have just given people on the ground to verify those invoices, then it's easier. But if someone is just sending it, then the verification should be done by someone from Pretoria or Simonstown. No wonder there's such a lot of challenges. I come from a background where we outsource services. Now, I will suggest to the department that because in terms of medical payment, in other provinces, they don't have these hospitals. In the beginning, they should bring people into their data. Where those people in the beginning of the year, they come into their data so that, for an example, doctors can be utilized. Then they know that if I'm in Komakhaz and I have to go to a doctor, there's a doctor in Komakhaz that is in our database as a department, that we know that doctor is giving out a tech clearance and all that you need. So people can go there to be seen by that doctor because the doctor is in the data. I believe that's what should happen, because some of the things is like we are also making our own things. We become too strict to our own self, and at the end of the day, nothing gets signed for. In terms of lack of knowledge, no personnel that knows. Are you supposed to be an official of correctional services? What do you call it? What else? Then you can be in procurement. In defense, are you supposed to be a soldier? Can't we hire people outside who've got qualifications? There are so many children outside there who've got qualification of this kind of thing that you are looking for, and you are not giving them services because a general or whatever should come in and become a procurement manager. What is it? They don't have a clue of what is happening. Why don't we take other people outside? I know in the department, I'm not so sure about the disabled soldiers who get disabled at work. Is there retraining for them so that they can sit on those positions because they won't be able to go outside and fight anymore? What are we doing there around those issues? Because if you say the generals keep on coming into procurement, getting out and get another job because now we are not really there, it's not clear what we want to do in terms of retention of thing. And another thing, I agree with Honorable Ramachara. Immediately when you put that, even if it's a three coat,
You must, that person that is applying that request must have a tax clearance. Now, if you say other service providers, because of their bank details are not working and all. And another thing that I would like to add to the department is to say, maybe we should have a system where you are able to, you know, in other companies, you must produce what have you done. If they say to you, per day, you must capture 20 invoices to show that you worked for your money. It happens. Maybe we need to look at that route to say, people have, like you're saying, at the end of the year, some of, only now that people, I can see here, you play people at the end of the year because you're afraid that they will say you didn't spend. Maybe people in that procurement department should be able to have something that makes them to show that they did work for the day. Because one of the reasons we're saying some of the invoices are in someone's drawer and that person goes on leave. And then the next minute people don't get what they get lost. Can you have also a system that captures individuals to say, what have you done? Because I'll capture one invoice and go. What is on my table is 20 invoices. Let us look how we do things smartly without having to do a lot of things. Suppliers forum meets on a monthly basis. After they've met, what's next? Is there any actions that is taken to make sure that things are happening? Or is it just a meeting for the sake of meeting? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, any other comments?
All of members, I think that there are many questions that are there. But I want to bring something to the attention of the members. You know, I wanted our forecasters to say we listen to them, we've listened to them, and what is the plan? How do we turn things around? I think Honorable Haraplom, you're correct to say if you take it from 70% compliance, 45%, I mean 85%, but Honorable Sir is correct to say that 15% for an Honorable Ramasagan, for small people who are part of this 15%. It's like the 100% if I'm dependent on you or what. But I think Professor Kulube, I think that members are correct to say maybe we're not in the department in the industry, but what we know we see every day, when we see the advent there for tender, it is bring this the condition that you must have these things. It has a condition that if you don't have, you go out of the door. You're not shortlisted because you don't have the tech clearance. You don't have all the requirements, basic requirements you don't have. So it means that we must, that eliminates dispute in terms of the tech clearance, the banking details, and all the things. We assume that those things are checked upfront, fairly which you don't know what you call it. You're not supposed to be considered. How these people get to be considered with the lack of those things. Somebody is not doing his or her job somewhere. Somebody is not doing his or her job somewhere. And members are saying, even the what you call the report of the AG is saying the problem in government is that people don't perform. And it means nothing. Whether you have performed or not performed, it is the same. Why? Because there are no repercussions for not doing your job. You know? Let's take, for instance, the recent the report of performance monitoring and evaluation. Management performance monitoring and evaluation. And that's where really Rafael point out where are weaknesses in the department, and I hope that defense has also seen that report on issues of government. It really says that there are challenges. In fact, Yes. The issues of government, you know, issues of compliance. It says, I don't want to say what it says here, but it's a public document, you know. But it says that this department is not compliant. You know, unfortunately, it's putting 100% of non-compliance. I mean, the latest report that was presented to the committee was last week. Yeah. So, which means that there are challenges from the new HR. I don't know if there's somebody from HR here, yeah, but there's a chief financial officer, there's what. There are clearly challenges. People are not doing what they are supposed to be doing. You know what the members normally are. But if people are not doing what they are supposed to be doing, how comes that they still continue to get bonuses for not complying, you know? But clearly, it's clear that there's a lot that needs to be done. It means that there's a lot that needs to be done. I mean, we're looking at your... unfortunately, I'm sorry, a prof, you know? I sympathize with you, but... you see, your action plan, you know, it's not really convincing to be, just to say the least, you know. It's not really assisting us. You know, we are government, it's different. But if the law says you must not steal, and you steal, what do the police do if you steal? The law says don't steal, you steal. What do the police do? They catch you. Because you have stolen, you have done something that you're not supposed to be doing. You get caught. You get closed up in the prison. You get locked up, the magistrate judges, they sentence you. Why? You have not complied with the law. But what does it do? This is the law. Because the act is a law. It is law. When people don't comply with the law, what do? People don't comply with the law. There's no action. They don't comply with the law. But with the thieves, with the hijackers, with the all criminals outside there, if they don't comply, they get arrested for not complying with the law. With us here, if they don't comply with the law, it's fine. You haven't complied, it's okay. I think that we have not really taken this thing seriously enough. I think we have got to take seriously enough. Each one of us, the responsibilities of the Public Finance Management Act, the delegation of powers are very clear in terms of what are the responsibilities. If officials have not complied with that, I think we have that. What is it that is supposed to be done? If these things are not happening, who can do these things? Can we do these things in Parliament? No. We can't do these things. But the Act prescribes who is supposed to take what action. Not anybody. Who is supposed to take what action. And I think that, if you're not taking action when people don't comply with the law, these people are pulling you down. People sometimes who... have you, embrace you, they're not doing that, they're not honest. Because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of the law. But it is not enough. It's not enough to pretend that, no, it's fine, we're fine, it's fine. But when it comes to something that will measure you in terms of your success or your failure, they don't do it, they don't comply. And that we're not helping the department, let alone the people who really depend on us. So, I think, Prof, really, you need to be very clear. We need to be very clear in terms of what is to be done. Does each one of us here is each one of us clear about his or her responsibilities? Who are asking the gentleman there behind for procurement, and what is your responsibility? I didn't understand the title. But I asked, what is his responsibility here? It doesn't matter if the doctor in Tuba Tuba or elsewhere, somebody is taken there. I think that we know as a department, the only people who knows what are the challenges in the department, what is supposed to be done, it cannot be the doctor there. It's only the department that knows, that looks in order for us to make your work easier there. You know, sometimes what people do next time when they are sick, the doctors chase them away. Okay, I'm noting you. The doctors chase them away. Why? They're going to get paid. You know, many people, if you're telling them that the government has got this way, they say, oh, government, I'll never get paid. So I don't want to work to do work with government because I don't get paid in time. And people, everybody depends on this. So.
My timekeeper,
thank you, Chair. I was also worried because there are other departments that we have seen, and listening to you is like reminds me of other meetings that we had before. I can see, yeah. Other meetings. I was worried that you are not going to stop. I can see that. You are in that mood, you see. Chair, can I make a proposal with all what you have said and our colleagues have raised? I think the challenges or the questions that we have in relation to what has been presented to us have been said by almost all my colleagues who have spoken, more especially from the Appropriations Committee and the others. And just to give this department a chance for them to implement this plan with questions that were raised, taken into consideration, and then come back. Unfortunately, we don't have all the time to sit with them. We still have a house and we have a tree, and I think that all the crucial questions have been raised. And in the process of implementing the plan or doing their work, when they come back to us, they must know that those are questions that we need clarity on them. So the question of non-payment of invoice is a big question, which runs across all these departments that we are meeting every day. So it's good for them to hear that we are very serious about it, and we need really them to respect the law and do things according to the law. So I think we should share. I propose, I don't know what my colleagues are saying, that let's allow them to leave, give them space, and come in. We must also take into account that there are changes that there's a number of things that I explained that will make some departments not to be up to standard of the things that we need them to do. But that is not an excuse. Now they've come in front of us, and when they come back, if it needs to be, just give them time to come back and bring the clarities, and including all these other things that have been made. My colleague is right. You don't take a general or a major to do something that is not trained to do. So you need people with expertise. And I think, as you were saying, those are issues that we need to address because they are a result of the mess that we are in today. At least you have highlighted some problems. And I think as the committee, we should appreciate that because some departments, they don't even tell you what is the plan. You know, they're so defensive of the mess that they're in. The fact that you are able to understand and tell us these are the problems and now the way we are going to rectify them, we appreciate that. So
So we need to give you chance so that when you come back, then we can take off our gloves, because we would have given you an opportunity to do what we need. So that's my proposal, colleagues.
I think that the proposal is understood, but I think that we'll be doing a service of justice. We'll be doing a disservice to the quality if the department comes here. We don't say what is the lie to the department. We hear them, we let them go. It can't be what we call the correct. They must be clear what is it that we want as a committee. And you stopped me while I was what you call it, trying to do that, because I was not going to ask them to respond to this question. But you say that these are the things that we want. That's what I was pointing out to the department about the things that they need to do in order to improve. So I think that is the issue that. Honorable colleague, I think that maybe we should be doing instead of, I mean, it's important that next time we don't get this kind of thing. We have recognized the issue that the department is improving, but it's important to have the right people at the right position so that this doesn't happen again. And the issues that have been raised here are issues that we are aware of. Issues of that no tolerance to big money. We know how budget it is done, the processes of involving in the budget. Because the department, the budget is approved on the basis of what is tabled. And the budget says we'll work within this budget. And things that they can't do, things that they cannot do within that particular budget. Those processes. So please assist us to assist yourselves. Look at the what you call those issues of the budget. I mean the budget process. Before people come to the budget tables, people go through the processes. And if you look at honorable members, if you look at the estimates, for instance, of national budget. All the departments were told cut this much. See how to how you proceed forward with limited budgets that you have, because the country does not have it is not having more money. But the minister, when the minister tables the budget, he says we will have to do the best. We'll have to do more with the little that we have. So. Defense is no different. Everyone has got to conform to this. But the challenge could be that we're not doing everything we'd want to do. But we have, for those things that is budgeted for, we must comply with them. There's no what you call excuse for that. So please, Mr. Secretary, can everybody do what is supposed to do in terms of this. But also, I would like, what would assist us, please look at those results, and I think that you should let all your senior management staff look at these results of the performance management. These are the results that lead to these, what they call it, challenges that we are having today. On that note, do you want to say something before we adjourn?
Just to thank the committee for all the inputs. It's a process, it's not an event, as you said, for continuous improvement.
Sure.
And I find all the suggestions, proposals, and inputs made very useful. I'm sure they go a long way in helping us as the department. We will be then developing an action plan with time frames and persons responsible, and we will be happy to report to the committee maybe on a quarterly basis where in terms of how far are we succeeding in how far are we going, how far are we in implementing that action plan. Yes, we are engaged with management performance assessment tool
And this coming Monday, I will be chairing the meeting of the Defense Staff Council, where we will be reviewing the report of the Department of Public and Monitoring, Public Comment and Monitoring Evaluation, to see how, as a department, we are doing in terms of compliance. Just to assure the members of the committee that we do take this interaction very, very serious, and we do take the views expressed and the input made by the committee very serious, and we will action those suggestions made. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Secretary. I think that the department is we're looking forward to the result of your meeting. I think that we have, I don't want to repeat ourselves, but that people must still account for, each one of us must account for what we are doing or we are not doing. Thank you very much.
as I was saying, so they are holding up, you know,
because they do not get paid in time. So it is well with your small medium and I mean your SMEs. Now, luckily our government has taken this issue so seriously. In fact, before I come to that, because you justice DG, maybe I should take an approach, a different approach for you. That the people who come before justice are those people who breach the law. Now, they are made to appear before you as justice because they get arrested, they get this, because they have not complied with the law. What is law? Even the Public Finance Management Act is a law that says this is how things should be done in government. Your travel regulations, they give guidelines in terms of what is expected from each official, from the accounting officer and down. Now when these things are not done, then there's a challenge. The challenge is that they say when two bulls fight, the grass suffers. The grass is the ordinary person there who supplies the small service, who really depend on the month-to-month income that will come from that service that he or she has been requested to supply. But in the case where those rights are trampled on, then many of them, they fold up because they depend entirely, they live from hand to mouth. So, and some of them, PG, we raise it with the previous department, we raise it with the coming department, because as public representatives, these people come to us and say, look, I have not been paid. Then you ask, what do you do? They say, no, please don't go to them. Find a way of handling them. The person wants you to assist him to raise this thing with the department. But he was also afraid that if this matter is raised with the department, he will never get a chance to do a service again, because it's going to be blacklisted. You do report, and then we'll deal with you. So people prefer not to report. Now, how do we ensure that now our government has taken this seriously? No forum of South African Director General, your foresight, you deal with these issues. Treasury and the Departments of Monitoring and Evaluation, they raise these issues every day, but continuously. There's a breach of what you call this is not done. You know, I mean, payment is people are not paid. We had a presentation from National Treasury and the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. And unfortunately, DG, your department was sent as a department, as one of the departments that were not improving. I think that last year you had an underpayment of $172 million. Well, to you, I know that it's not a big amount, because maybe you're paying over a billion or billion. But to this one person, small people who fall under this amount who have not been paid, it's a lot to them, because they depend on that in order to save it. So the issue really is mainly what is the plan to turn around this issue of not complying with the 30-day payment. So with those few remarks, I'd like to welcome you and invite you to address the committee. But as I say, that our focus is what is the plan. We see what has not yet happened. The main concern is what is the plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members. Good morning. And thank you for the opportunity to share with the committee what are we doing and how do we plan to turn this situation around. Chair, perhaps as a department and as an accounting officer, I'd like to first just confirm that the reading of our situation is correct. Perhaps we may not agree on the extent whether there has been no turnaround or very minimal turnaround. At least we can have debate that. But insofar as the reading that there are areas where we are not paying within 30 days, let us first accept that. And where it is our own making to not pay within 30 days, we are addressing this. But I just want to say what would assist us as well as the department is that perhaps I haven't indicated this before, is that as the Department of Justice we take pride in the small steps that we are making in turning our misfortune around and the non-payment within 30 days has been one of those areas that we have prioritized over a reasonable period now. And we are seeing the difference and what one may even term a considerable difference. But anyone supplier who is not paid may not feel that turnaround that we are talking about until they are paid and until they are paid on time. So we accept that completely. Just to contextualize our situation, firstly, I as a person, as an accounting officer, I fully accept my responsibilities in terms of the law, both the PRMA, but primarily the Constitution. We can't treat people unfairly. At least we do not take pride in treating people unfairly in any manner or form. Secondly, we also want to contextualize that responsibility in the Constitution and in the PFMA and the Treasury Regulation with the total running of an organization of our size, of an organization whose services are spread out in the manner that ours are. First and foremost, Chairperson, we are operating under an environment where we have had to build our own capacity to address limitations in our space. So as I speak to the presentation, I'd like to contextualize this from a period 2010 to where we are today, because I think it will give you quite a fair reading of the areas where we've improved on in terms of managing payments within 30 days. The first thing that happened in 2010, Chair, is that we didn't have any capacity in the department internally to be able to address this issue, in finance in particular. So when I'm limiting myself to capacity within the financial management space, we were operating with consultants which we had had over many years. So in 2010, we took a conscious decision that we were investing a lot of money in those services where we had employed a lot of consultants, and we said we were going to do away with that. And therefore, we removed a number of consultants that were managing our finances way back then, I think for the previous 5 years or so. And so we didn't really have space there. By doing that, we had to go through some level of slump in terms of how we manage our finances, because suddenly we woke up and we had no technical expertise of significant note. But we've since then built our internal capacity as a finance unit, in particular in finance, so that we are able to address these areas, each one of them individually. And in this particular case, we then formed a credit management unit
which was going to be able to assist us in addressing this issue. The chair said we must provide a plan. So we started with the plan way back then. It then meant that once we had made that decision, we needed to fill positions, and we have, to a degree possible, we have filled positions in finance. I think the last position to be filled of significant note is the CFO. So from 2010 to now, we have not had a CFO, but the CFO is coming now in October, on the 1st of October, is starting with us. So that is the first issue, Chair, that we think is going to assist us quite significantly in addressing this issue. Secondly, in populating that unit in particular, the credit management unit, we had to appoint people, and we have since done that, and those appointments have happened, and therefore the people are already in place. Of course, they are not fully capacitated, but at least they are there doing the work on a daily basis. Thirdly, we had to work through a system because, of course, naturally our systems have not been that great because we are not only reliant on what we use, what government uses generally, which is the PAS system in doing the procurement. We are using our own JIP, which was a decision we made way back then. Unfortunately, that system, together with everything else, was not able to assist us to manage this thing as clinically as we wanted it to be managed. So in the past few, last year in particular, we decided to introduce a control measure that is now web-based that we are using throughout the organization on managing invoices at point of entry and managing invoices at point of payment. And, of course, we do engage our colleagues in National Treasury quite extensively on the measures we are introducing, together, of course, with the Office of the Auditor General, and they've given us quite significant guidance on that. With all these measures, Chair, and my acting CFO will indicate to you, and the presentation speaks for itself, is that we've moved from a point where we were very slow in paying our service providers, whether the invoices were valid within 30 days or not valid, as the case may be. We've also analyzed our information quite significantly to be able to know the invoices we are not paying, why are we not paying, and be able to communicate that. And the invoices that we are paying, we've analyzed how long it takes us to pay those invoices. And I think the presentation will show that. So where we are, Chair, compared to last year this time, compared to the previous year this time and the previous year this time, we have moved quite significantly, leaps and bounds. We are still very embarrassed that we are still not able to pay everybody within 30 days. But we have moved quite significantly, and I just thought it's important, Chair, that we make that point. Secondly, Chair, I really wanted to contextualize this in the context of my responsibility as the accounting officer and the CFO's responsibility as the CFO as regulated as such. We are very grateful to the Department of National Treasury for the support they've been giving us over the years. And I must say, in my spell as the DG of Justice, I have enjoyed quite significant support from National Treasury in terms of how they've assisted us in intervening in areas that it would otherwise not have been possible to intervene. And I'm addressing myself specifically to the level of accruals we have as Department of Justice. Now, in 2010, I think we had accruals amounting to about 680 million chair. And that level of accrual happened in the context of a budget cut that we had absorbed over a period of time. And I think if you work out the accrual to the budget cut that we had experienced, they almost net each other out. So it tells you that the accrual that we had accrued over that period in part were as a consequence of in part the budget cuts and in part the underfunding. And it's not this, it's information that is that you can find in the parliamentary records because we've been presenting this scenario to Parliament, to our Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development, to National Treasury back in Pretoria consistently over a period of time. And I'd like to highlight five areas that have been challenged primarily. The security services have not been growing at the level at which our business is growing. So we have a national footprint countrywide, and every course of ours must have security. And right now we have courts that are running without security.
and yet they do need security. We have, of course, a very vast judiciary and a very vast prosecution that needs to be supported through security services. And these are areas where they are quite sensitive. If you are running a totality of the business, you need to be aware that this is an area where your justice system may or may not work as a function of that. So security services for us has been the biggest challenge, Chair, over the past, give or take, 10 years. But if I limit myself to 5 years, in the past 5 years, year on year, we have had serious underfunding in that area. Of course, Treasury has been funding us, but it's likely, well, not likely, significantly below where the cost of those services are. Significant in this context, that the roughly the cost of these services run between the escalation between 10% and 15%. Inside the negotiation, and we are finding that roughly between 5% and 6% increases year on year. Now you can tell that that difference has to come from somewhere, and it does significantly contribute to the level of accruals that we suffer. But as I say, Treasury does fund us to the extent that it is able to. So I'm not complaining about Treasury here, but I'm telling you the reality of where the situation is. The second element, Chair, that we've again is on record, is our leases. Because we can't always construct fast enough, we then lease a lot of buildings. And of course, the lease escalations range between 7% and 10% from time to time. And that differential generally has to be picked up by the department from our own baseline. The third element, and the most significant element in terms of daily expenditure and money expenditure, are services of sheriffs and are services of transcription services as well as the library services. Now, it may sound that those services are not significant, but our court infrastructure cannot work if your transcription services and your witness fees and your sheriff fees are not paid. So countrywide, we receive invoices of significant proportions, and again, the presentation will show you that information. And the reason why we are indicating this information is that whilst, and indeed must be judged according to best practice, and we accept that, both with the Office of Performance Monitoring in the Presidency, as well as with the Auditor General and National Treasury, we want them to measure us like everybody else. We don't want to be measured differently. But we also want that understanding to be understood across the board. But incidentally, our business model is slightly different to the size and nature of the business model of National Treasury, Performance Monitoring, and any other department that plays an oversight role, because we provide services on the ground, and the challenges on the ground may be different from time to time. And this is not an excuse, it's just the reality of how life is in processing these invoices on time. The last issue that I wanted to reach is that in seeing in 2010 that we were having a difficulty in paying within 30 days, what we said was we needed a model that is going to assist us. And we said consolidating all invoices at national office level does not help us in as much as we thought it would originally. So we said there would be some elements of decentralization, therefore we will have to address our delegations in the decentralization model, and some level of centralization because you have to have control at one level as well as the other. The decentralization has assisted us in being able to pay for invoices where there are no issues. The centralization has had to be done where there are issues with invoices. We're very aware, Chair, that a 30-day period runs when an invoice is a complete invoice, no issues. But sometimes you take an invoice and assume that it's a ready-made, call it, invoice until one fundamental goes out of the way. And let me give a slight indication of what I'm talking about. You would have at procurement level everything with VAT currencies being done and vetted at that point in time. But at the time of payment, sometimes the VAT certificate has lapsed, and suddenly that invoice that was otherwise a good invoice is suddenly not a good invoice anymore. So it's those systems that in part have moved things that we thought were needed to be dealt with at regional level to then having to be centralized at national level. So if you look at the totality of our indicators, Chair, when you look at payments within 30 days, you have to then contextualize it within the accruals that we have had and how hard we've worked to cut down the accruals to a significant number. Now, when I talk about the assistance that we received from National Treasury has always really understood that we are struggling with our accruals because of the underfunding that I spoke to not so long ago, Chair. But what National Treasury did last year to assist us is they gave us a particular dispensation which enabled us to at least have 200 million to be able to cut down our accruals. And therefore, you will see that then our payment within 30 days would have somewhat improved. And that was just because of that direct intervention. And it wasn't because we were not paying, because we had money. We didn't have money. That is why Treasury had to give us 200 million. Not in the legal sense, but naturally, administratively, indeed, Chair, we are very broke. But we are not candidates for liquidation yet. So the last issue that, Chair, I wanted us to deal with, which we've also been bemoaning over the past 3 years solid, our rates and taxes operating naturally in this national footprint are rising, as the Chair would know them. And our funding for rates and taxes has not caught up with the current rates and taxes. Now, when we then speak about us not paying on time, people who have been prejudiced by that primarily would have been Public Works in the main, would have been CETA with our IT system in the main. And of course, we haven't been that great to our security providers. But overall, how we have tried to prioritize the small and medium businesses, we tried to prioritize those and delay, if we could, delay DPW in the main. And we're not very proud of that, but those are the people that have suffered the most in the totality of how we've managed our finances. Again, Chair, as I allow my colleague to then take the comments through a very short presentation, I am saying these things so that in the totality of the scheme of things, the committee understands that we have a plan, that the plan is being implemented, and it's giving us the results, but it's not giving us the results fast enough. We are conscious of the President's call. We are conscious of this committee's oversight responsibility over us. We are conscious of our legal and statutory and constitutional obligations. We are not derelict in any manner or form, but of course, where we are, the space is such that we need to fast-track areas where we need to fast-track. And of course, it is amongst others, we believe, the responsibility of the committee to also assist us in the appropriations when we move forward, and we are very grateful that you've given us space to appear, and we can only look forward to good things from the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thanks, DG. DG, I think that you have presented this broad chart. I don't think that members are looking for details that Sokuni was paid, Swab was not paid, or what. We're looking for these principles that you're talking about, and that's where we want to pitch our discussions at that level, because it's about non-payment. It will apply to the small one, to the big one. I think that members are also listening to the question of members. The previous department spoke about the budget. I would like the some stage to comment on this issue of the budget. I don't know if you didn't introduce the acting CFO, Mr. Johnson. I don't know if there are things that you'd like to just add before we allow them.
Yeah, Chairperson and honorable members.
Okay, thank you very much. It's clear to me that the DG and the explanation which he gave understands the problem, and that is the main thing, and they're doing something about it. It's very clear if you look at the graphs, where they started there on that graph, for instance, in August 12, and where they are now, you know, you are doing something about it. It's obviously not perfect yet, but, you know, I'm very happy and congratulate the department. They've done something, and they are achieving something in the process. So, you know, I want to commend the department for what they have achieved, and I would like to motivate them to do even better. And they're doing the right thing. Keep public works up and don't pay them at all, because they're useless in any case. And keep paying the small guys. They need the money. Thank you, sir.
Okay. If you allow me, just maybe one or two indicators here. For me, we commit ourselves as a department to introduce a message to improve this presentation in terms of our outstanding accounts. If I quickly can just give you an analysis, because your concern was, you know, how do we ensure across our 1,000 call center scores in our small service providers are being paid on time. What I've done here, this is not part of your presentation, but just to reflect to you in the last 3 months of the first quarter in financial, where do we spend our money? And you will see, on average, we've paid 1.2 billion rand to 4,238 service providers. Now, it can be 10 payments to one service provider, but you can see between 0 to 100,000, this 57 million rand that we've paid, and where is this money going for the 3,500 service providers? It relates to sheriffs, stationary, legal costs, minor maintenance, virtually your small service provider. The sheriff is a small service provider, but for us, proportionally, it is something different. We communicate to the National Treasury the reasons why not, why we're not paying, who are the community service providers, what is our challenge, and as it is indicated, when we've got a responsibility to ensure proper internal processes, when these problems were changing bank details or head calculations or tax clearance certificates, we set up a process and communicate back to the court and Mzumkulu or wherever they are to fix the situation. We want an easy to raise the point about our footprint across all courts in the metropolitan areas and in rural environments. Confirm. Way before the president, honorable president, made the announcement of in this particular focus, we've introduced in 2010, we've appointed 18 officials, and these guys monitor on a daily basis women accounts, speaking to managers. We created the database management, created the database management system. We communicate with to create a general awareness. Now, there are two issues to it is firstly our responsibility to ensure payment within prescripts and in time. But for us also, and the detail has alluded to it, we cannot tell people there's no money for business fees. Or if a court cannot transcribe a court record. So there's a number of things security when magistrates commission needs to be funded. Those are things that is so sometimes unknown, unplanned for which we must make a provision. For us, lastly, there's always a concern, but also apart from SMMEs, what are we thinking about our local authorities? Because if we don't pay public works in time, they can't pay the local authorities in time. What the last slide reflect you is, in 1 or 2 years we had a problem, but in 2012-13, the original budget was 694 million rand. We've paid 771 million because we understand the local authorities are also dependent on us time to pay the municipal remuneration taxes. If I can quickly take you back, I think this is for us the key indicator is the last point that I would want to make. In the last 30 months, 59.6% of our payments was paid within 30 days. In the month of August 2013, 92% of our 59.6. In August 2013, 92% of our payments were made within 30 days. And I think with Treasury, we really would want to move gradually up to 95% into an ideal of paying We're paying all our service providers working for this. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, did he just ask me just to ask you to quickly show you how are we spending the money? In 2006, our department underspent with 470 million, but in the last 2 years, you can see 2012-13, through prudent cash flow management, we gave Treasury back 1 million. Year before that, 1 million. Year before that, 8 million. We didn't want to give them, but unfortunately, it's the rules of the game. But for us, it is our proud that we managed to improve our budget and expense management to this level. But it comes with strength, because sometimes in the last 2 months, you must decide which service provider you're going to pay, and then which side you're not going to pay. But for us, we are surely not complaining about our public finance in Treasury treating us, because they were budget cuts, but to the best of the ability, they understand our need to continue to ensure the board system is operating. Thank you, etc.
I don't know, if you want to
listening to the Department of Justice and Coastal Development and the defense, and maybe we try to play it down at that time, but it keeps on coming back, you know. What is the your understanding of the situation? Should the issue of the restructuring of the budget impact negatively on service delivery, or not? Maybe I shouldn't talk about service delivery, Edward, because I may include a lot of things, but unintentionally. But I'm just talking about the payment, day-to-day payment.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you allude to earlier on, I think during the Department of Defense's presentation, that you made reference to one of the reports that we normally provide on the payments for the 30 days. The National Treasury receives information on a monthly basis from departments, and we prepare a bi-monthly report to the Forum of South African Directors General. So I think the information that you had was from that particular report. And I just want to put the budget matter into perspective. The National Treasury plays an administrative role when it comes to the budget process. But the approval of a budget takes place at parliamentary level. I mean, Parliament approves the budget. And, after that process is finalized, departments need to reprioritize if there's cuts in their budget. But I think there is a misconception that the National Treasury approves budgets and the National Treasury cuts budgets. I think that is done at the parliamentary level, the political level. But I just would like to also comment on, from our information that we have and from our detailed analysis, the Department of Justice, I can confirm that the Department of Justice has made significant improvements with their payments within 30 days, as well as the number of invoices that are on hand that exceed 30 days. They've made significant improvements in that regard.
Sorry, I was looking for advice. How you caught me napping, you finished before I could even hear what I was asking for. No, it's fine. Honourable members, Honourable Dr. Pandek, Honourable Mafula.
Chairperson, it's actually more comment, but can be converted to a question, and I would like the department to respond. If you look at the figures, at the figures on the screen, you know, sometimes it's very strange to say that we stop at a balance of 99.99%. It sounds very smoothly. It could have been calculated in advance as well. I'm just, playing devil's advocate now. You know, if you stop, say, for 97% or 96% or something, but 99.99% to show that we survive in our budget. But I want to ask how many invoices taken in the previous financial year were then paid within the first week of April in the new financial year. You know, because it happens sometimes to for a department to show Treasury and also, of course, Parliament that, you know, they budgeted perfectly and they run it very smoothly and they just stop, you know, with the last penny. But we will never know how many invoices are still, you know, lying on the desk to be paid within the new financial year when the new budget, you know, and it will then, of course, you know, covered by the new budget and shown on the new statement for the new financial year. So if the department can just, if I'm wrong, well, this also tell me, but I know that sometimes it happens in apartments, you know, just to say 99.99, I mean, that is absolute, you know, the limit of perfect management. Thank you.
I think that the purpose of the committee is to ask every question, you know, but I'm just a bit afraid when we go to other terrains, which are not necessarily the object of this meeting, you know. Once we speak accruals, I think it's a subject on its own, but I'm really in your hands, honourable members, if you want us to discuss that. My understanding is that to say it is 92% something that we can say you're making progress, even if I fall on the 8% is fine, but 92% has been paid. Honourable Bulo.
I just want to understand when I look at the some challenges that they're having, they're talking about they're having challenges with what do you call them now again? They are saying in terms of security on page 7 that they inherit to the nature of control measures necessary to ensure payment of valid invoices. Now my question is, they know, how can they have to verify, whereas they know that they've got these companies that they contracted, you know, including, I saw in that presentation they were saying, sheriffs, sometimes they are not complying in terms of tax clearance and all. Out of curiosity, what? Yeah, so no, you know. in terms of technology, information technology, they say invoices received before the services were delivered or even before the networking is finalized. Already there's an invoice. For me, it means the system can be manipulated. People can just get into your system or people inside know what happened and that's why they can manipulate the system. But now, my question is, we are also talking about the transcription services. All the services that I'm talking about are the services that are outsourced. Am I clear? Is it the truth, DG? Outsourced. Good. My question comes up now. You know that you need some of the services here in, yes, out. The crucial is transcriptions of services. Why don't you have people that can do that or who are trained in that? Why is the place to make sure that we've got internal people that are trained? Why that takes so long? I'm not so sure. To be a sheriff, does it need a certain qualification? What must we have to become a sheriff of the court and do this? Because I'm also saying that is the second issue where we can train people and be having people in-house. So that now we are talking about retention. The sheriff didn't want to refuse to give you a tax clear. Why do you give them, in the first place, why do they allow them to do the job without producing a tax clear? That is one of the things that I'm, and in terms of security services, you are saying your department is a complex department. There's what do you call it, confidentiality and whatever you call it. But year in, year out, you've got different security companies working. Outsourced. I'm just asking, why don't you have people who have internal security of the internal inside the department to be trained and do the job, because you're talking about confidentiality.
And also, I'm asking these questions because we are also talking about there's no jobs in South Africa, but the way we outsource it leads, hello, it's the same with cleaning. Year in, year out, you need a cleaner, but you are outsourcing the service. I saw that outsourcing is a scarce skill that you don't have within the department. It's my own interpretation. I'm open up for question. It's a scarce skill that you need, then you can. Like you stopped consulting in terms of finances. You started to train people. Now there's retention of jobs. Now there's job creation. And you don't spend a lot of money anymore. Maybe we need to relook out of this, especially the transition services. We've got young people outside there who need jobs who are not trained properly. Maybe you should have a learnership of property. I don't know what is happening there. I'm just thinking loudly now in terms of what is happening within the department. And I don't know. You say on page slide 9, you say the total budget of the department is 695 on a quarterly basis. But in terms of security services, it's 700 million. I need that. I'm a little bit confused to say, is it this 700 million that include other services like the 695? I'm not so sure what are we saying there. And then you say, for non-compliance, escalation of non-compliance, it should be escalated to executive management and ESCO. At this moment, what are you doing if someone is not complying? Are you escalating it or is it still thinking about it? The other issue that I picked up in terms of unfunded priorities, immediately when the president made a state of the nation address, there are certain issues that you pick up as a department that the president is talking about. Why don't we plan it when we come to our next? Why are they not part of the budget? Because for me, the budget needs to talk to planning. And then the other issue is what? Yeah. Municipalities, where you say, making an example about that you are paying municipality, the rate are increasing. For me, it's also a lack of planning. Because, you know, on a yearly basis, things are rising up. Every year, whether it's municipality or what, something is rising up. The prices go up and up and up. Now, why do you under budget for it? Like, for example, you know that the petrol itself, immediately when the petrol goes up, everything goes up. But when you plan your planning, you underscore yourself by 5.6%. Instead of saying, maybe we should add a little bit because the petrol will be up, salaries will be up, whatever it will be up. When you add all those things, maybe they can reach up to 10%. But forever you are under budgeting that, those kind of things. So I don't know. And it is not clear. Maybe next time we will look at when you plan, your budget should go together with your plan. For every activity, you must have an amount. Because sometimes you put a budget there, but when it comes to activities, it's a different thing. Let them go together so that you can be able to know when you're going to use. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Mkulo. I don't know, honored members, this meeting is not my meeting. It's your meeting. I'm really in your hands. Any other comments? No other comments.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members for comments and feedback. We will split the questions between ourselves just to capture the responses as much as we are able to. Let me perhaps start with the last set of questions from the Honorable Mfulo in terms of the challenges. she's quite correct in a number of ways when she says, why are we having invoices that are not valid from sheriffs and all of that. And where the committee is, I guess it's not immediately clear why that is. Let me use the sheriff as an example. Many years ago, we had sheriffs in our databases that were appointed, and then the issue of tax year and certificates was not a big issue. And in the recent past, as I guess best practice continues to improve, we have had to also improve that. Now, we're talking about people who have been in the system for years and years and years and years. So it's been a lot of work to try and convert the industry to be able to provide us with the administrative detail that is required. And so I can understand where the Honourable Member comes from. But to the extent that we've worked hard to get the industry to be compliant as a key service provider in our environment, we can assure this Honourable House that it's something that is within our eye of sight. Secondly, I did illustrate that the movement is very quick from being compliant to being non-compliant, and it requires a lot of eyes to ensure that a person does not move from being compliant to being non-compliant at a speed of lightning, which then results in the challenges that we're experiencing. Please remember that even though we are talking about payments within 30 days, the impact may go very quickly from payments within 30 days to being irregular expenditure and so on and so on if you do not manage that portfolio quite well. And we work very hard to reduce our irregular expenditure, and that's why we are applying quite tight management in this area. Secondly, the second question that arises, I think, and permeates through all the questions, is why are we choosing an outsourcing model as opposed to a model where everything is done in-house? There are two areas why we've gone the way we've gone, and I'll speak very briefly to what are we doing to try in some areas reverse the trajectory, but in other areas we prefer to keep it the way that it is. If you look at transcription services, transcription from way back then when those who are lawyers were still young lawyers, transcription was not as big a deal as it is today. Today, our courts are receiving enormous number of cases per day. And so if you had to have your own transcription services of people that are employed in the department on a regular basis, on a daily basis, you have a portfolio of people throughout the country. Now, in terms of your total cost of employee, it might not be practical to have that at least throughout the country. So what we might want to do is to look at which areas we want to do that and which areas it is not practical to do that. But transcription services must happen on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, in every court. And it's near impossible to expect that you would have all of those people in your books as employees of the organization. And therefore, it's the option of outsourcing those services was preferred way back then, and we still think that it's a better option than having all of those employees and the risk associated with that in our books, at least for now. Thank you.
Chair, just like to explain, I was just asking about, it took them so long to realize that, what do they call it now? No. What do we call them now? Consultants. That consultants speak a lot of money. Now it's transcribed. They said no, there will be a lot of people. The question is, have they really looked at what needs to happen? For an example, in big courts, they need people. Now in small courts, they may not need people. It's just practicality. Then if you say it's a lot of people on your shoulders, and you are talking about unemployment, whereas at these companies outside, they don't have a lot of people. They were fewer people. and then they charge a lot of money. I'm just asking
you. Can I just interrupt you?
Before, Chair, I just want to understand.
I just want to.
She must make the comparison between the two.
I just want to assist you in that. I'm not stopping you. All I'm saying, just to summarize the question you're raising, you say to the teacher of the department, there are services that you require every day, hourly, as the TG says, all the time. Why outsource those services instead of having, employing your own people? Which one perhaps is cheaper? I think that is the question that TG was beginning to enter. I thought TG was still coming to that question, which is a very important question.
Thank you, that's another one.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I'd like to go back and confirm that we've looked at each of the services that we render, and there are those that we decided it was practical, it was economic to be able to do them in a particular way. Let me use a service that we have not mentioned here: interpreting services. Those services, we had a huge contingent of outsourcing of work there, but we've kind of moved into integrating most interpreters except for foreign language interpreters in our books. Now, we do this, we don't just wake up, we plan, we look, we see what's practical and what's not practical, and over how long a period that we can be able to do that. And I was using this just to illustrate the point that it's not that we have not analyzed our services, because indeed we have. It's also not that we prefer to outsource. Where we think outsourcing still can buy us time to be able to build our own internal capacity to be able to do the things that we want to do, we have opted for that. But where we think that outsourcing needs to come to an end almost immediately, we've also gone that route. And I just wanted to clarify that. So that is the service that we are rendering in terms of just assuring that the court operates. But let's come to the sheriff, because I think she had a lot of issues around the sheriff. The issue around the sheriff, there are two underlying instruments that enable us to run the sheriff in the way that we do. One, we are running the sheriff in that way because of the fidelity certificate, which is the fidelity funding. For us to be able to take a risk as a department, there are certain things that we must have in place. So one of the fundamentals that we must have in place is the risk, is financing that risk, that if the sheriff attaches the wrong property, if the sheriff does this, if the sheriff does that, we will make good. Now, we do not have the capacity as a public service. So in that area, it was decided not by me, but way before I was born, I guess, that sheriff must handle their own fidelity certificates and be managed in that way. Now, in the past 3 years, Benesta has assisted us quite significantly in transforming the sheriff sector. And in transforming the sheriff sector now has a board that manages that part, but also manages the incidences where the sheriffs do not perform as expected and as regulated. Now, the legislation defines that sheriff's work must be done in a particular way and must not be done by the Department of Justice. And let me explain, only in the following areas can the Department of Justice offer services. One, it's where we are serving international process, where from one country to South Africa, we then do it ourselves as a department, and we don't charge. Okay, that's one thing that is free. Secondly, it's where there are no services of sheriff in that particular area, especially in those provinces that are quite vast in size, where you do not have service all the time. Under those circumstances, only then are officials of the department allowed to be able to provide the service. Kilometers, it's quite plausible under those circumstances. But we do not appoint those people as sheriffs in the strict sense of the word. They are appointed to do a particular service in the department. And in addition, then, as and when we have those processes that are not able to be served by anybody, can they be served by sheriffs? So I just wanted to give this committee a comfort that we are not on a wholesale outsourcing business. In fact, we've reduced quite significantly areas where we have outsourced. And it doesn't mean that we've stopped. it just means we keep looking at opportunities where we can save money as the department and then decide on a different model. The two areas that she had identified, the transcription services and the security services, right now as we speak, are not ideal for that purpose. Now let me just very briefly, in about 3 minutes, Chair, tell you what are we doing about security services. From 2011 to today, we are in a conversation between ourselves, the Department of Defense, as well as SAPS. For us to be able to utilize the, I don't know how to put this in good English, the senior members of the two, the police service and the defense force, to be able to provide security to the Department of Justice. Now, we've worked out the numbers, we've been toing and froing, we were almost in agreement and then we couldn't agree on what is transferable by one way versus the other. But in both instances, with both departments, we had looked at what is strategic, how will we enable as the Department of Justice, the Department of Defense, to refresh its force and to be able to provide the service. And second, and then we said, well, if we take the top end in terms of seniority of people that can no longer be in the borders and wherever it is that they are, and we can then use those to secure our own infrastructure. Similarly, we could take the top end of staff and put it to be able to secure it in our infrastructure. We are not at the stage where those agreements have been done yet. Therefore, we are still procuring services almost on a two-year contract until we have resolved that conversation. Once we've resolved that, we will adopt a different model altogether. So it's not as if we are in town, we are seriously at work. And then finally, on my part, the rest the acting CFO will deal with. I just wanted to speak to the issue of planning, Chair. And in speaking to the issue of planning, I agree with the Honourable Member that if and when the President makes a determination, an announcement, whether in the State of Nation Address or anywhere where he makes those announcements, we ought to be able to plan for those. We sit twice a month as Executive Committee of the Department. The 1 week is that one expo deals with managing the finances of the Department throughout the organization. The second week, we talk about the overall performance of the Department. Now, in this 1 week where we talk about these things, that's where we do the reprioritization and the environment in Department during this process. So it is. I can understand where she comes from, but I don't think we don't plan. What I agree with her on is that sometimes our plans are not that well oiled to be able to give us the results that we want almost immediately. But it's not that we don't plan and it's not that we don't move money quickly enough. We operate through a very regulated environment and even as we do that, we have to get the necessary approvals.
Can I be rude with you or with your CFO that I want to give 5 minutes, you know, now because the time is no long on our side. Mr. Johnson, you want to fill up on the gaps?
Thank you, Chairperson. As Mr. SEDC has communicated to me, budget management for us, this is something that we are substantially tight. We get guidance from Treasury in terms of what is the projected inflation for the next 3 years. And we then, when we do our cost escalations or main escalations, we then use it as benchmark. Sometimes we apply our own mind. But we couldn't foresee that transport costs will increase so substantially with the weakening of the rand and the international fuel price. Now for us, periodic roads and access to rural communities and moving those roads is... Sorry? But there is substantial cost because every day we must move judges, magistrates, interpreters and court personnel to various rural communities. So here's to the best of the ability, we try to cover through internal, through our budget planning, but sometimes things don't happen. It's a fact that we can relationship security. It's not that we don't plan it. Any given day, there might be a call with certain messages or court personnel needs to be protected. And then we need to reprioritize. I want to give you a statistic. In the public sector, there is this broad norm that you either spend 60% on your budget on personnel and 40% on operations, or 65%, 35%. we are so much under strain at lower court, our ratio is 78-22%. So I think I agree with you that this is not an poor to possibly negotiate funding, but it's important for us when we do our cash flow management, expense management, that we take cognizance of that. I want to raise one last point in terms of our crews. Yes, we're spending 99.9% of our budget, but a year before that, the previous year, our rollover of our crews was 190 million. We managed to bring it down to 85 million. So we take note of economic climate and when budget and public finance tells us there's no money, we really look at our existing contracts and see how we can get efficiencies. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I'm glad that DG, you in this presentation, your portfolio committee didn't come because I know the chairperson how he felt last year. I'm sure you do know around the PNR. We're going through those times again on the PNR. I don't want to see him. I think that the most important thing is that to the departments. All the departments are, I think what we have picked up on our members is that the issue of the 30-day payment is being taken seriously. But obviously, DG, I think as you have indicated, would like to see a situation where it's a reoccurrence. You know, most people can go home happy having been paid. But I know it's an ideal world that I'm talking about. But, I mean, if you are over 90, it's possible that we're moving towards that. It can never be 100% or what. But as I indicated, that as public reps, we don't want to find a situation where people are afraid, you know, because they can come, if they come to you, they know you will listen. They come to the official closer to them. They, who says, oh, you're becoming clever now. And then people are afraid that they won't get to work from the department. Right? But I think that the issue that Honorable our members have raised are much, much broader issues. I think that if we had time, we could, the issue that we want another meeting. I think they are bothering some instances on issues of transformation and what, but I'm saying we can't deal with that now. We'll just focus ourselves on the 30-day payment that would want people to ensure that something is being done, graph is promising, it's going down, what do they say, in economics when it is going this way. Positive or negative. So, DG, I think that one of the members, one of the Swart, somehow, I don't know what you gave him, DG. He said that, no, the department is doing well, you know. No, but the committee doesn't say that, police. Well, I think the members are correct, the important thing is to look at where the challenges, what we're doing about the challenges. And the question that Honorable Mfulo is raising, because the Auditor General as well raises this point of just using consultants for the sake of using consultants. But we're happy that you're addressing all those article issues. On that note, I would like to, I don't know if you want to say some parting shots for 1 minute, DG. Sorry?
Thank you very much. We are just honored to have been listened to. And Chair, just as one issue, it's quite possible that people do feel intimidated, and that I can never speak to. But if an issue like that is raised to the Honourable House, whether individually or collectively, we are happy to look at it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Tichi. Honourable members, we are meeting at 2, and with whom? With Correctional Services. And if Honourable Fuller is not here too, we're going to keep you at the Kimberley Prison there. You know. Honourable members, the... Sorry? I'm told that there are finger snacks coming. So you have an hour to stretch your legs. Oh, 45 minutes. Or less than 45 minutes. Thank you very much.